you can't listen to anything outside the building, because when we were 0-3, they were saying we were done. And when you're 9-3, they're saying either you haven't beat anybody or you're going to be the greatest team in the world, you know? So, I mean, you can take everything with a grain of salt, because if we listen to anybody at any other point in the season, we'd be in a different spot. So we're just going to do what we do and play football.
That is one Mr. J.J. Watt. Probably just getting out of the funeral. Probably on his way back.
Oh, he's back now.
Back to the, back to the facilities. Yeah. NRG doing his thing. And, of course, B.O.B. was there, too. That we heard.
I didn't know that. That's what Rhett Landry said.
So B.O.B. was
there. Who's running practice, man?
There you go. B.O.B. was there.
Because we've got interviews already in the can that we'll play for you here from all kinds of players post-practice. So, yeah, I guess it was Romeo, huh?
I was going to say Romeo probably knows a thing or two about conducting a practice. It'll be the first time he's done it in his day. And then you probably get a guy like a Sean Ryan and a Tim Kelly, who we always hear time and time again are kind of the guys that are sort of the offensive coordinators, if you will, or they're the ones that do the most offensive work. I tell you what, it'll be interesting to see what this group looks like on Sunday now that we know that WLB's missed practice.
Look, a sign of a good leader is able to step away once in a while.
Got
the right people
exactly
in charge.
Exactly right. You got to be able to delegate, man. You got to be able to delegate. And so that's one of the things we'll be looking for this weekend. But listen, they're going to be fine. There ain't no question about that. Kelvin Benjamin, who was released by the Buffalo Bills earlier this week, is on his way to go visit the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to be in town, Kansas City, today. And, of course, the question is, well, we know that he's not a running back, which is that's the position they need, although they did sign Kendrick West yesterday, a guy who we thought the Texans might take a stab at, but I guess that shows you how much they felt about one Mr. Deontay Foreman finally showing up. Speaking of finally showing up, the 41 traffic was real. my man coming from a true Nauth Cider, the one, the only, also the pride of the fo-fo, the one, the only. 14-year NFL veteran Henry Tomas.
What's happening, Houston?
How are you, man?
Oh, man, traffic is crazy.
It was, right? They shut down highways, man.
It's just, I don't even think it was that. It's just, it's like paper mache. Add water, you got a clog.
Okay. Which makes sense, because you were coming south, so.
Yeah. And it was just, it was nuts.
Yeah, it was.
Nothing. Then all day long, I'm hearing all these war stories. Oh, I did this, and. Somebody told me a story about this bomber and parachuting, and I was like, what is going on?
Oh, with the George Bush stories?
Everything.
Oh, he's great American, man.
It is great American. I process death a little bit differently.
You do? Tell me how you process death.
Hey, I'm still living.
You're still here.
No, I thought you had something profound about it.
Nothing at all.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's just, you know what? You recognize all the things he's done, and I'm glad everybody's getting a chance to, you know. But it's a shame you recognize him after he's gone. Why not tell him when he was here? I mean, now we've had all this stuff going on.
Let me ask you this. Do you have a George H.W. Bush story?
Yes, I do. How'd you know that?
Well, this is the time for it to come out. I mean, everybody's got one.
What's yours?
I was at Lochinvar one time on the driving range, and I was sitting there getting ready to warm up, and there's a bunch of people, and I notice there's a lot of people, and I'm out there, and I'm fighting this slice, and I'm hitting the slice, and somebody says behind me, "I still about 280 yard slice there," and I was like, and I thought it was one of my buddies, so I turned around with an attitude like, "What the?" It's the president, and it was he and George Strait about to go tee off.
How about
right before
that?
Us. Yeah.
How about that?
What'd you say to him?
That's a twosome.
I was like, thank you, Mr. President. That's exactly what I said. And then I looked over. I was like, George Strait. And he was more surprised that I recognized him. Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, he's not on TV. He just
seems like,
that was not a race ball. I'm just saying, he was surprised that I recognized him.
How tall was he?
Not tall at all.
Because George
Strait. He was taller than Prince.
Miriam's taller than Prince, isn't she? But isn't that the thing? Because it seems like H Dub was a little bit taller than. I mean,
he was tall.
Yeah, he was 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah,
he
was up there. He was, okay, because I spun right around thinking it was one of my buddies about to just lay into him, and then like, and then that dark suit next to him. Yeah. It stood out a little bit.
Easy, big fella.
Hold on there.
Easy, cowboy. Yes. Don't make me drop you. Don't make me drop you. Did you think Dana Carvey when you heard him talk?
No.
Okay.
No, I was not a fan of Dana Carvey. I mean,
Saturday Night Live, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, but I am a fan of him now. I'd like his stuff that he does now. In the,
what does he do now? I didn't even know Dana Carvey was still alive.
He has these podcasts and stuff that he's always on, and it's just
he just does impersonations.
It's, yeah, it's no impersonation, but it's so more in depth about what he went through to be who he is, and it's
he actually during the break we mentioned him earlier.
Yeah,
I did a little search. He actually was pretty eloquent about HW.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said that he said that he invited him to his house once and said, "Do me."
Yeah.
That's not weird.
Not at all. It's like, what do you mean, Mr. President? Start pulling off your shirt.
He wasn't like upset about him doing the impression or impersonation.
Yeah.
He was flattered by it. So that's pretty cool.
All right, so here's the deal. You've got a Colts team on Sunday. They're sitting at 6-6. Let me ask you this: you got the Colts on Sunday, coming off that loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars, did not look good at all. I mean, hell, this is a team that was balling for 5-6 straight games in a row, and then of course that Jacksonville defense did what
they
should have been doing most of the year, but they finally came back to earth. Let me ask you this: from a defensive standpoint, just real quick. Was Blake Bortles, because again, and I hate to pick that scab on the back of your neck, but as a guy who played with a lot of mediocre quarterbacks in his career, does swapping out a quarterback, when you've got a great defense, and let's call it what it is, Jacksonville does have a pretty dadgum good defense, and they finally came to life on Sunday, did switching out Blake Bortles make that much of a difference defensively for that team from a mental standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you got a mediocre quarterback and the rest of them are going to be mediocre, it's just fresh change. You know, it's new blood. Let's get a new energy. Let's get a new vibe going.
Yeah.
And we're going to do what we do. I mean, like you said, I've played in games where we've had two or three quarterbacks, you know, where one guy hurt, the other one comes in, he's not doing well, put the other one back.
So, yeah, dude, just two guys. I mean, let's call it what it is. Blake Bortles sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. Tell me if I'm crazy about this, because I know these two think I'm crazy. I do think he can be a serviceable NFL quarterback if given the right head coach. I'm a firm believer that this guy, I mean, listen, I'm not saying this guy's going to be Bortles. Yeah. I'm not saying this guy's going to be, Joe Montana.
You're saying he could be a Case Keenum.
I think he could be an Alex Smith. All right. I really do. I think he could have Alex. I think he could have an Alex Smith like career because A, he's mobile.
Only because he started.
And the thing was, I mean, let's call it what it is. Alex Smith was a bust. Everybody was calling him a bust for the first 5-6 years into his career.
Yeah.
And people forget, oh, by the way, you played with Mike Nolan, crying out loud, the guy that tried to wear a suit on the sideline.
That's a great comparison. Like with Goff, I mean, his first year, we were ready to ship him out.
Right.
And in comes this coach and
changed everything.
Yeah, changes everything. I think he can be serviceable, but I mean, it's like when Sanchez came in the game on Monday night. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And his first play goes 90 yards for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. But then his first pass, I mean, it wasn't even close to getting intercepted or the receiver
catching it. It was that bad.
It was horrible. It was in at a patch of grass that no one was within 8 yards of.
Right.
Let me ask you this. You look at this. Okay, so back to the Colts real quick. So
back to the Colts.
They bounce back. They bounce back from the they're coming back from this Jaguars game. They're 6-6. I don't think they're really a force to be reckoned with as far as AFC South is concerned, but they are, according to NFL.com right now, they've got a quote unquote 57% chance of making the playoffs, with 4 weeks left. Put yourself in a defensive mindset because I know that's the kind of guy you are. If you're that Texans front seven, all right, this was an offensive line that for 4 weeks, 5 weeks didn't give up a sack. Then last week, 9 quarterback hits, pressures, and 3 sacks. This is a Jacksonville defense that I think you're very comparable to, this Houston Texans team, when you look at that front seven. What are you looking at about what they did differently in that week versus what had been done the previous 5?
Well, as a defensive lineman, you're looking for that weak area where the breakdown was because you get 3 weeks of tape. So you get 2 weeks where nobody touches him, and then you get that third week where, now where's that breakdown? You're trying to find that weakness, that breakdown, and exploit that when your team
wins. What's your guess about what do you think happened? Well, I mean, without seeing it, but I mean, just from your experience, what do you think went down for 5 weeks you're balling, then 1 week you can't keep them clean?
I don't think it was what they did. I think it's what Jacksonville did. Jacksonville had the potential of being the team in the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they haven't done anything. All the talking from individual players, they just said, okay, this is what we got left. Let's salvage this. Let's do something with it. And I think that front seven just said, we're going after them. We're not, we're going to clog up everything. They're not getting everything. if we only have to score one field goal, we're going to win this game. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they went out and played the game. They didn't, whenever the offense screwed up or three and out, it was nothing from that defense just ran on the field and said, let's get it done.
Right.
And I think it was more Jacksonville than it was Indy.
Interesting. Okay, I can get down with that. I mean, and again, that was a team who, you know, you knew with Jacksonville going into this year, this is what they potentially could be, and they finally did it. And again, it was more of, you knew, they know Cody Kessler sucks, right?
Yes.
But was a part of it too is that with Blake Bortles still being in there, there was still that frustration when it's just like, will you please at least swap him out so we can at least be somewhat relieved?
You get that frustration when the guy who, you know, top pick, you know, quarterback this, blah, 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 blah.
Right, right, right.
And you haven't done anything. You haven't, you know, as, because I'm on this team and I see it, it's, you're getting these yardage and this, all these numbers stat-wise, but right. We're not winning. You're right. Not doing anything to help us become a champions or win games.
Yeah.
So the defense took it upon themselves. That's what they did. And the next guy that comes in, all he does, even though he's terrible, I mean, what did they score? 6 points?
6 points,
right.
Even though he's bad, it's a new blood. It's a new – it's something – we're giving this guy the opportunity, the benefit of the doubt, because this guy's taking all that. We know he's garbage.
Exactly.
So let's try somebody else. You know, every time someone new comes into the game, especially at that quarter, everybody's looking at that position. You're supposed to be able to do something. This guy just came in and managed the game for him and kept from making huge mistakes where Indy can capitalize on, and they just went out and performed. And that's what you do in those situations. And when new blood comes in, even the offense likes it. I mean,
yeah.
Offense, you can ask any offensive player on any team except wide receivers. And they're all going to say, oh, well, we're working on this. We're working. They're never going to say anything bad about that group unless you talk to wide receivers. They're cut from a different
cloth.
Different
breed.
That guy sucks. But
yeah.
But they're all going to support whatever guy is that back there. But when that new guy comes in, you see the energy change. You see the way it plays.
Especially with a guy like Blake Bortles, who everybody's kind of sick and tired of it already. All right, coming up next, we'll run the question by one Mr. Henry Tomas. What does it mean when a guy goes, when gets cut midseason? Is there anything left in the tank for him? And when you look at this Texans team, all right, you got 4 games left. It's the quote-unquote final quarter of the season. We look at the other teams that they're playing up against. Get Henry Thomas' thoughts on where this Texans team lands come playoff time. Lots to get to. Glad to have you on board. Don't you go anywhere. This is In the Loop on a Thursday.